He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for listening to this Best of Bill Meyer Live.
A new study says half of Americans who buy their own health insurance could face higher premiums next year under President Obama's health care law. The nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation says about 48% of families buying their own insurance would be eligible for tax credits, covering about 66% of the average cost, but many other people earn too much to be eligible for help. Dr. David Stevens is Chief Executive Officer of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. That's an organization of 16,000 doctors. He says the church has a continuing role of providing for those in the community.
Especially the physician-assisted suicide issue, it's time for the church to move beyond its own doors. We are very good at taking care of families in our church where there's serious illness, people are dying, you know, the food comes pouring in and all that kind of things. We need to get beyond that to take care of people in the community who aren't in the church that are going through that. Because the main reason people opt for death at the end of life, assisted death, is that they are isolated, they're alone, they're highly controlling, and they're not having anybody coming alongside to help bear their burden. That's what Christ would have us do. We need to be involved in hospice, and that started in the church, and we need to turn that over to secular forces. We need to be hospice volunteers. We need to have community help. That's now going on in churches in this country where they have even nurses that are hired by the church to visit the sick in their community, or people that are visiting door to door and helping with health screenings and transporting people to gym or to their doctor's appointment. Not people that are members of the church, but just people in the communities. I think the crisis that we are in healthcare gives us an enormous door to make a difference in people's lives and a reason to come alongside. That's what Christ did. You know, and if we imitated what he did, helping the sick, not people he knew, not people that were just disciples, but people he met every day, then he introduced them to his Father, and their bodies and their hearts were transformed. And I think we need to be more actively involved in this area individually and as a church. You can call up and be an hospice volunteer. They'll train you and get you out there taking care of the sick and the dying, and you'll be changed, and you'll change people.
President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act in March of 2010. It was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court a year later. People who are not covered by an employer plan of health care can start to enroll in Obamacare the 1st of October, and their coverage becomes effective on the 1st of January. Dr. David Stevens says this will change the percentage of every dollar in America that's spent on health care.
We definitely need to reform health care, but the basic issue is not access. The basic issue is actually mentioned in the act, and it's called affordability. The reason people don't have insurance is they can't afford it. But unfortunately, what the act actually does is increase access and doesn't make it more affordable. In other words, it ultimately worsens the problem. We turn to people and say, okay, now we're going to give you aid in buying insurance. We're going to try to make insurance more available, this type of thing. But all we're doing is increasing the bill, paying for it with tax dollars. And actually, studies have shown already that this is increasing the cost of health care. In fact, there's just a study in the Wall Street Journal where one of their reporters went and looked at insurance policies for a healthy 40-year-old man, single, who doesn't smoke, and found out, looking at about seven or eight different states, that the cost for the bronze plan, the lowest level plan that's available under the Affordable Care Act, doubles to triples the cost of what he can get insurance for today. And you say, well, why is that? Well, that's because the government has mandated certain things. First of all, insurance companies can't say no for pre-existing conditions. I think that's a good thing, but it does increase cost. You can leave your children on your health care policy till they're in their mid-20s. I think that's a good thing, but it increases cost. There's no lifetime limits to what the insurance company must pay. That increases cost. So all the things that we've done, actually people like, increase cost. And that is a big problem as we move forward. If you look at Medicaid and Medicare, two of the big health care programs we have in the United States, we know from history that all of them were predicted to cost much less than they actually did. And we're already seeing that with the Affordable Care Act. It was estimated the net cost would be around $1 trillion over a 10-year period. Already, before this has even started, the projections now that it's going to be between $1.3 to $1.4 trillion over 10 years.
There were some of the aspects of this that were unfavorable, certainly to someone who had the faith or moral convictions. So talk a little bit about some of those directives and those mandates and maybe an update on that.
Well, the one thing that caused a lot of concern was the Independent Payment Advisory Board, IPAB, which is a group selected by the president, which essentially had the authority to decide what was going to be covered and what was not going to be covered in health care in the United States. Essentially, they sent their recommendations to Congress, and Congress had to implement them unless they could override them with a two-thirds majority. And that was extremely unpopular because people were concerned about rationing. And what we need to remember, and I see as I see patients, is that no two patients are alike, even ones that have the same disease. So you have to have the ability to tailor what you do, not out of a cookbook, not out of a protocol, not out of what some bureaucrat has decided is the best thing to do, but what you consider best based on your experience and your professional knowledge for that specific patient. The other concern is that the whole issue of right of conscience. And we have right of conscience laws on the books in this country, but unfortunately there's no enforcement provisions. And we're seeing more and more bias and discrimination against people of faith in health care. We actually did a survey of physicians, nurses, pharmacists, and others, and 40% of them said they know of a colleague or they themselves have been discriminated against in salary and hiring and education or whatever. And that's a big issue. Now, that's been taken even to a greater extent with the contraceptive mandate, which is part of the Affordable Care Act, requiring that every insurance company in the country provide contraceptives to women at no cost, no copays. And that includes all, quote, FDA, Federal Drug Administration, approved contraceptives. Well, two of those contraceptives, the regular morning after pill and the morning after pill that covers you for a week, are known abortifacients. They prevent the implantation of the developing human being. And the accommodation that the government has given in this instance is totally inadequate. It doesn't cover businesses with peoples of faith. And if you are self-insured, it does all kinds of accounting techniques to make it look like you're not paying for it. It's going to be provided free to your employees. Great concern about this because it really violates the Bill of Rights and our freedom to religion.
Dr. David Stevens of the Christian Medical and Dental Association talking with Neil Stavem. Stay tuned for Dr. Bill Meyer and his guest in just a moment.
For Family Talk, here's Dr. James Dobson.
You know, one of the most enjoyable things about having an international radio program is the thousands of cards and letters that I get from listeners. And I particularly love those that come from children. One of those letters came in recently from a 9-year-old girl named Christina. She sent me a poem that she had written and dedicated it to her grandmother. Let me share it with you. She said, "There's a place that I like to hide. There's a place with love inside. It's my Nana's garden. And when it's all quiet, I just stand still and listen to the trees and the whippoorwill. There's a place where I like to hide. There's a place with love inside. It's my Nana's garden." It's my Nana's garden. Isn't that a creative bit of writing from a 9-year-old girl? Christina does sound like a very lucky young lady to have such a loving grandmother. I've always believed that grandparents have a God-given responsibility to help care for and nurture their grandchildren, and most do an admirable job of it. Children instinctively crave the companionship of their elders. Grandparents, let me encourage you to stay close to your grandchildren. Don't meddle, but do be available. And parents, do what you can to foster closeness with your moms and dads. Your kids need them more than you might think.
There's more Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson at MyFamilyTalk.com.
You're listening to A Best of Bill Meyer Live on Faith Radio. It's Dr. Bill Meyer Live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And welcome back. It is so great to have you with us today. Thanks for listening to the Faith Radio Network. And if you haven't joined us Monday through Friday for some of our great programming, please do so. Neil Stavem is our program director here, and he's put together some of the best Bible teachers in the world on Faith Radio. And then, of course, we have several live programs. We have our morning show. We have Neil's show at noon, Connecting Faith. We have Susie Larson's Live the Promise every afternoon at 3 p.m. Just some fantastic programming Monday through Friday to help you through your work week, to strengthen your faith, help you share your faith more effectively, more boldly, and basically just to grow in your relationship with Christ. So join them, my friends, Monday through Friday here on Faith Radio. Well, joining me is Shanti Feldhahn. Shanti is a wife and a mom first, she would tell you that, as well as a popular speaker, a best-selling author. She's a social researcher, and she investigates what she says are the most important things we need to know about the most important people in our lives. Shanti's eye-opening books include For Women Only, What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men, and For Men Only, A Straightforward Guide to the Inner Lives of Women. That one was co-authored with her husband, Jeff. Some of her other books include The Life-Ready Woman, Thriving in a Do-It-All World, and Made to Crave for Young Women, which she co-authored with Lisa Turkhurst. Shanti, welcome to Faith Radio.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
Now, I should mention that Shanti and I have known each other for several years through Focus on the Family, and I love your work. I love the fact that your work is based on research. You're not just giving your opinions. You're not just saying, well, I think, or a lot of people say. You're actually diving in and doing the hard study, and that really comes out of your background. You were a Wall Street analyst, weren't you, before you started this journey?
I was. It's been such an unexpected journey. That's really a good word, Bill. I actually got a graduate degree that was very analytical, and I had no idea that I would be using it in this way. I started out on Wall Street, and I was a financial analyst, and sort of digging into the Asian financial markets, a very, very different use of that skill set. It was really interesting. God really took me on a right-hand turn, and I ended up kind of unexpectedly using that skill set to investigate these things that are going on underneath the surface of men and of women and basically the people who are most important to us. So everything that I talk about, and I'm sure we'll be talking about today, is all based on surveys and that type of research. So we can talk about the surprises and be pretty confident that what we're saying is the truth.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about some of the numbers and the way you gather the research in a minute, because I think it's fascinating. Before we dive into the book, though, I always enjoy introducing our listeners to our guests personally. So can you tell us a little bit about your family and maybe tell us, I know you're a busy, busy lady, but what do you enjoy doing for fun when you're not speaking or writing or researching?
When I'm not on an airplane somewhere?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me introduce myself a bit. I actually live in Atlanta these days. We moved down from New York a number of years ago. And so my husband, Jeff, and I have two kids, and we have a daughter who is almost 13. I've been meaning to call my friend Bill Meyer and ask him for advice on how to handle my teenager. My son is just turned 10. And we have two cats and a very busy life here. And I guess, you know, honestly, one of the things that I love doing when I'm not out speaking and traveling and, you know, locked up in my office writing a book on deadline, we are big games players. Our family has really, now that the kids are just a little bit older, we've finally gotten to the point where instead of only being able to play like board games with other adults, you know, some evenings, and have the kids watch a movie, we've finally gotten to the place where we can play some board games as a family. So that's been our new big fun thing that we love
that's
doing.
That's great. We yeah. love that as well. And I'm actually going to ask you, maybe you can give me a few suggestions. This is really off topic, but I know you won't mind.
I don't mind.
My wife and I have actually been, we've got a lot of the, you know, traditional games at home. We've got, you know, Sorry and Aggravation, and we've got Taboo, and we've got Monopoly, and, you know, things like that. But of the newer, have you got any of the newer games that have come out in the last few years that you go, oh, this is just a great family game that you love?
Yes, actually, we just got introduced to one. I don't think it's really, really new. It is relatively new. It's called Ticket to Ride.
Ticket
and
to
I
ride.
Highly recommend it. Everybody listening now is now writing this down.
But, yes, they are.
You know, it has nothing to do with men and women and that kind of stuff, but it is a fabulous family game and really actually equally fun for the kids and the parents, which is unusual.
That's great. So Ticket to Ride, and I'm going to ask you maybe off the air, email me a list of some of your other favorites, and I'll share them next week. Because
okay, you share them with me because we're looking for good ones still.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard Sean Hannity recommend a game that I think he advertises for, and I can't recall the name of it. Apples to Oranges or something like that. But anyway, we'll do some more research and pass that along on next week's program.
Okay. Because
I'm constantly hearing from parents that say, you know what, we're trying to turn off the TV.
Yes.
We're trying to shut down Facebook and spend more time as a family.
Yes.
And games are a great way to do that.
Believe it or not, my daughter had a friend over yesterday. And I was absolutely bemused, very excited, but bemused when we walked in the door and I said, okay, what do you guys want to do? And she said, can we play Ticket to Ride? And I'm like, oh that
great.
Is cool. Instead of, you know, going on YouTube and showing her friend the latest video that she wanted to show her or whatever. So.
Well, especially, you know, that you've got a teenager who's, you know, as you said, about to enter she's not a teenager yet. She's 12 and, what, 3/4?
Exactly, yeah.
Almost there. But that is so great to know that she wants to do something like that and spend some time connecting with her friend and perhaps with mom, too.
Yeah,
so
with me,
let me,
too, which was amazing.
So you were playing along with the girls.
I know. It was very
that's
fun.
That's great. Very cool. And I mentioned earlier that Shanti co-authored this book, Made to Crave for Young Women, with Lisa Turkhurst. That's something that I would highly, highly recommend to the moms listening today, to the young women, whether you're a teenager, to a college student, in your 20s, maybe to women who are involved in youth ministry in your church. This is just a fantastic book. It's so important. And Shanti and Lisa did a great job of bringing in important biblical concepts, but also some of the psychological research on what girls and young women are looking for in this world and how oftentimes the world steers them in the very much in the wrong direction, and they end up suffering as a result. So Made to Crave for Young Women. So getting back to For Women Only, aren't you doing a re-release of that book in the very near future?
Thanks for mentioning that. Yes, we have been learning and researching continuously since the books were released. And, you know, because I'm a researcher now, it's sort of what I do. And we've had other projects, you know, like the workplace books, that kind of stuff. And we realized somewhere along the way, my husband and I were comparing notes after one of our marriage conferences that we had done earlier last year. And we went, you know what, about a third of what we're now saying on stage at every event that we do isn't even in the books. Like, we've learned so much since then. There's so many really important things that, you know, has expanded in our understanding of the really important surprises and what women need to know or men need to know. And so the publisher was like, yeah, absolutely. We have got to update these. These are evergreen books. We have thousands and thousands of churches around the country that are using them as their premarital counseling, you know, before a couple gets married in the church. And we really wanted to keep them updated. And so, yeah, that's coming out in March. We're very excited.
That's great. Both the books, right, the For Women Only and For Men Only, are coming out in March?
Yep. The revised and updated versions, yeah. And we're finally, you're going to laugh at this. You know how I have no capacity to do anything these days. I'm so busy. We have been needing to do DVD Bible studies to go along with them. And we have a big one with Lifeway that they've done for women only, you know, years ago. And it's great, but it's very big. It's, you know, the type of thing that has a lot of homework. And there's a need now for a lot more simple Bible studies that are more easy for, like, a small group to do or even a couple to do on their own. And so we're releasing those this spring as well. So that's
great.
A very exciting big project for us.
And I'll mention your website. It's just shanti.com, S-H-A-U-N-T-I, shanti.com. You can find out more about those books in the coming months and the Bible study curriculum as well. Now, let's talk about the research you did for Women Only, because I think it's pretty fascinating. And then after we talk about that, I want to talk about the reaction that you received from a lot of women, especially when you were first on Focus on the Family. I do remember that. So tell us how you went about doing the research.
Well, basically, I did two types of research, and I spent just tons of time, and I have continued to do so, interviewing every man I come across. And that's sort of the anecdotal qualitative research, and it's basically digging into the things that men are thinking and feeling but sometimes don't either feel able to say because they don't know how to express it in a way that will be received well, or just stuff that, you know, they haven't really dug into and they can't articulate about why they're feeling something. But when I describe, you know, things that I've heard from other men or I describe what I'm seeing in the research, they go, that's exactly it. I couldn't put it into words. That's exactly what I'm feeling. And so these interviews are so helpful because I promise every man anonymity. You know, no one's ever going to be able to identify who said what. And it basically allows me to understand these things that you don't hear normally. And then what I do is I say, okay, I think I'm hearing this. And I test it on a national survey. And these surveys are very rigorous, very, very reliable, very expensive surveys, so that I can say, you know, this really is true. If 75% of men said this, that is pretty darn close to a very accurate number. It might be 74.1, you know, it might be 76.8, but it's somewhere in that ballpark. And so over the years, I've actually spent, I added it up recently, and I've spent more than $400,000 on this research over the last 10 years.
Wow.
In order to be able to go on a program like this with you and say, you know, I know this is surprising, ladies, but guess what? 75% of men think this way. And for people to know, wow, I can trust that. That's true.
Let's talk about some of the broad themes. We'll unpack the specifics in just a bit. But if you were to have an elevator conversation with somebody and they said, so what's that book all about? What did you find in that research? What are some of the things that really just jumped out at you?
Well, one of the most important ones that I always say first now is it is unbelievable how much of a misunderstanding so many women have about how their men feel inside. Because we think guys look so confident in themselves. And that surface thing is the way we treat him then. And we don't realize that on the inside, our husband or our boyfriend or our sons, they look so all together. But on the inside, there's a lot of self-doubt. And there's a lot of a sense of, you know, I want to do great. I want to be a great husband, right? I want to be great at what I do at work or whatever, but I'm really not sure that I know how to do that, and somebody's going to find out that I have no idea what I'm doing. And so there's almost this, like, raw nerve of vulnerability that we don't even know is there, and we can hit that nerve without realizing that's what we're doing and send him the message that, yeah, you know what, you are inadequate, and it's painful, and we don't realize that. And once we do, and we look for ways to go, oh, my goodness, if this is true, I need to be looking for ways to affirm him and build him up instead. It changes everything in the dynamic of the relationship. So that's one of the big picture things that really affects everything else we're going to be talking about today.
Now, do you believe, and I know you've studied history as well, and you're interested in sociology, anthropology, do you believe this is a relatively new, let's say 20th century phenomenon, that men feel inside, that they really do feel inadequate, that has a lot to do with, let's say, father absence or inadequate fathering, that little boys growing up in a home where they did not receive the sort of affirmation that they needed from dad, Or do you think this is just a, I mean, if you go back and look at history and the writings of early experts, do you think this is something that has always been around for guys since Adam?
You know what? I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think it's been around since Adam. I mean, if you look at it, honestly, one of the things that God said to Adam after they got chucked out of the garden, it's fascinating. He said, you know what, Adam, you're going to always feel from this moment on like you are working the ground by the sweat of your brow.
Interesting. So it
sure
seems
can make it more, I'm sure it can make it more painful, though. Yeah.
It seems like something ingrained from the fall and something every guy's going to have to deal with and every woman needs to know about. My guest is Shanti Feldhahn, and we're talking about her book For Women Only. We may delve into her book For Men Only a little bit during this next half hour or so, but if you are a wife or a mom or you know someone who is, stick around.
Now here's more of a Best of Bill Maher Live.
And welcome back. It is great to have you with us on this Easter weekend, 2013. I'm Bill Maher, and you're listening to an encore presentation of my interview with Shanti Feldhahn. Let's join that interview in progress. Shanti is an author, a researcher, a speaker. She does marriage conferences. She talks to women and men about some of her fascinating research and what she's learned about the inner lives of both men and women. And we're focusing right now on her book, For Women Only. And we talked about this broad theme of the fact that men, even though they may appear to be confident and have it all together, on the inside, they may really doubt themselves. And one of the things that's most important in a marriage relationship is that a woman needs to affirm her man. So what do you say to the women? I know you got this feedback when you were on the Focus on the Family broadcast and first introduced this topic. What do you say to the woman who says, well, you know, I have no respect for my husband, or he's just, you know, a lazy bum, and why would I want to affirm him? How do you respond to them?
The first thing to say is, you know what, I do understand, obviously, that there are difficulties sometimes, right? I mean, and legitimately, there are some concerns sometimes. It's not all easily fixable. But here's the thing that is amazing that I realized as I was talking to guys, is guys will become the person that you treat them as. And every man wants to be the hero for his wife. Every man wants to be the man that she needs. And the thing is that they respond in such an extraordinary way when you can force yourself to stop sending the message that I think you're inadequate and instead try to find the things that you can affirm. You know, even if there are some very real problems, you know, certainly we can't downplay that. But it is amazing when you can find the things to affirm, like, okay, maybe you don't think he's trying hard enough to get another job, right, after he was laid off from the old one. And it's so easy to say, you know, get off the couch and go look for work. And instead, even if it's hard to say, you know what, he knows perfectly well that he is not doing what he wants to be doing in providing for his family. And the more I focus on it, the more painful it is for him and the more it demotivates him. So what can I focus on that can affirm and can say, wow, you know, I understand that this is hard for you. And instead say, you know what, yeah, I know you're trying, but you know what, this is such an important time. I saw what you did with little Johnny yesterday where you spent an hour with him out playing baseball in the yard. You are such a great dad. Thank you so much for spending this time when you're out of work to be so involved in our kids' life. And that is like, oh, it's this huge thing to a guy. Like he'd walk over hot coals, right? And so that one thing has been a huge surprise for me and has been a huge shift. And even in my own marriage, when there are things that I'm disappointed in or things that hurt my feelings or whatever, that's legitimate. Instead of focusing on those, when I focus on the positive things, it just suddenly everything else changes. And that's one thing that I think a lot of us women just don't realize. And it came out on our surveys, too.
What did the guys say as you were doing the surveys or as you were gathering the anecdotal information from the men you have interviews with? Give me some of the specifics of what were the words they used when they talked about that issue of wanting to be confident, wanting to believe in themselves, but inside maybe having those real doubts and fears.
They all called it, I feel like I'm an imposter. I feel like someone's going to find out that I'm a fraud.
Wow.
And it's, I mean, it's huge words. I mean, this isn't like just little like things that happen in a corner. This is a fundamental, very secret part of a man's makeup. But at the same time, it's basically, here's the summary of what I realize is in the heart of every man, is this, the cry of his heart is, do I measure up? I want to measure up. I want to be the husband she needs. I want to be the dad my kids need. I want to, but I doubt myself. And so he's basically asking, do I measure up? And he is looking to the most important person in his life, which is usually his wife, for clues to the answer to that question. Does she think I measure up? Or does she think I'm a fraud? And so basically what I tell us, you know, women, since we don't realize this is going on inside your hearts, you know, is I say, look, anything that sends the signal that I think you are inadequate is something that is just going to kill him. But if you can, even though it's hard, not focus on those things and instead focus on the things where you can say, okay, here's where I think you're fantastic. Thank you for mowing the lawn, even though it was so hot outside. You know, thank you for playing with Johnny. Or maybe you wish he'd play with Johnny more. And he doesn't, but you know what? He cleans up the kitchen for you. Thank you for doing that. Whatever it is, it's going to just build him up, and he'll eventually be motivated and feel like he's able to be more of a man you need, and that will just be this positive cycle instead of feeling like he's always unable to be the man that you need.
You know, I was talking to author Rick Johnson last weekend, and he said one of the things that men want – one of the things they want most of all to hear from their wives is, you are a good man. You are a good man. That's
yeah,
just
well,
striking.
That is so clear on the surveys that I've done. I mean, it stands out so much that we, see, here's the thing. I think most of us women absolutely do see our man as a good husband and a good father, even, you know, even if there are some issues, right? I mean, because there's never anybody who's perfect, and we're not perfect either. We generally do see him as good, and we just have no idea that he's questioning himself this way all the time, every day. And we have no idea how much he needs to hear, thank you. You know, he has no idea, we have no idea how much he needs to see the signal, you do measure up, you're a great dad, or whatever.
Now, biblically, this fits so well. If we're calling ourselves a Christian, if we're trying to follow Christ, you know, Paul tells us to encourage one another, to build one another up, and we read over and over again in Scripture about the importance of speaking blessing to those, certainly in, you know, other Christians within the church and the body of Christ, but we have to apply those things to our families as well, and I often feel like those one another's of Scripture, we think, well, you know, that's something I'm supposed to do in my small group or in my congregation, but we're supposed to carry out those one another's in our families as well, and that's probably where it's most important, isn't it?
It is, and it's the easiest to let go because we kind of all take each other for granted. And it's, I mean, it's fine to feel like, you know, in a safe, you know, family environment that you shouldn't have to be on eggshells. That's not what we're saying. But just be aware that the most important person in your life needs to hear it most of all, right? And and the other thing, though, here's one of the other surprises that I got, you know, from the book and from the research, is how you build the other person up. For a woman, for example, trying to build a husband up, it's totally different than the way that you as a woman need to be built up and affirmed. I mean, everybody, you know, likes affirmation, but we as women are so good at, oh, you know, honey, thank you. I love you so much. I love you. And we try to serve and we try to do these things that we hope he'll find to be loving. And we have no idea that for guys that's nice. It's not like that's bad, that's nice, but it's not nearly as important to him as feeling like she respects me, she appreciates me, she admires me. That's even more powerful to a man than feeling that she loves me. And in fact, actually on the survey, I was shocked when we forced the men into a choice, they actually said 3 out of 4 men said that if they had to make a choice, they would actually give up feeling that their wife loved them if they could just feel that she respected them.
Wow. That's stunning.
A big, huge difference between men and women. So, you know, I love you comes naturally to our lips as women. We don't realize that what they need to hear is, I'm so proud of you, and thank you, and great job. That's way more powerful to a man than even I love you.
And yet again, I know we have women listening right now who are saying, I just don't feel like I can say those things to my husband because I don't feel he does measure up, and I don't feel he is the man that he needs to be. And so I guess what I'm hearing you saying is you have to kind of grit your teeth and not lie, of course, but to find, you know, to unearth those diamonds in the dirt, those things about your husband, even if there are areas of his life that need significant improvement, to find the things about him that you can appreciate, that you can respect, and to focus on those and to verbally affirm him for those things.
Well, I have an example of that. Do we have time for me to share it?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, good. I didn't know when we were going into a break. So here's a way of looking at it, right? There's two scriptures that I think are really, really powerful in this. And one comes in the fifth chapter of the letter that Paul wrote to the church in the city of Ephesus, right, in Ephesians 5, where over and over God says, you know, through Paul about marriage, husbands love your wives, but wives respect your husbands, right? Like it's a command. It's the same need for a guy that feeling unconditional love is for a woman. Like you want your husband to love you even when you're not being lovable that day.
Right.
You want him to treat you kindly and be gracious and I love you and be sweet and overlook some of the crabbiness or whatever. You want that and you feel like you need it and you deserve it. And that's part of what marriage is. And it's the same thing for guys. And that's what God says in this is it's a decision. It's a choice. It's not always a feeling. And now here's the really amazing thing. In Philippians 4, where Paul is writing, like he's in prison, he's chained to a wall, right? And he's saying, rejoice. You know, again, I'll say rejoice. Okay, so it's a really good question for any woman who's saying, well, how do I do this? Okay, so Paul, you're in prison, chained to a wall. How do you do this? How do you look at the positive? And here's the answer or the prescription he gives just a few verses later. He says, okay, you think on whatever is lovely. You think on whatever is true and excellent and worthy of praise. And it's fascinating. You know, there's this great phrase, and the peace of God that passes all understanding will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And so it's amazing when you will and this is a challenge that Nancy Lee DeMoss has given some of the women who listen to her and read her books. And I'm like, Nancy, can I steal that? Because it is so powerful. She calls it the 30-day challenge. And it's for the next 30 days, here's what you do. You don't say anything negative about your husband, either to him or about him to somebody else, not a girlfriend, not your mom, nobody. Don't say anything negative or critical. And at the same time, for the next 30 days, find one thing each day that is excellent and true and worthy of praise, right? And tell him and tell somebody else. You know, tell him and tell your girlfriend, your mom, you know, he was so good with the kids yesterday. And it may be the only thing that you can say that's positive that day. But you know what's going to happen? As you start focusing on the positive, are you going to be more satisfied or less satisfied? Everybody knows you're going to feel more satisfied. And it's amazing when you refuse to say the negative things, are you going to be more or less dissatisfied? Everybody knows the dissatisfaction is just going to kind of diminish a bit. And so it's amazing. It's a way that God has provided for us to actively change how we feel. The choice of the action absolutely will change our feelings over time.
Mm-hmm. And I know for a lot of women, they may not believe that, but it is true. And it's certainly borne out if you look at some of the psychological research. You look at, for example, cognitive behavioral therapy. Oftentimes, changing our behavior and our thinking then leads to a change in our feelings. And you may, if you take that 30-day challenge, find that you are feeling more positive about your husband, more loving towards him. I'm going to give you a phrase you can steal from me, and that is, catch your husband being good.
I like that.
When I talk to parents, I often say, parents that have a lot of conflict with their kids, I say, catch your child being good. What can you, even if, you know, they're doing everything wrong, but at dinner, You ask them to pass the napkins, and they did it without complaining. You can say, hey, thanks so much for passing the napkins. And that may seem like a tiny little thing, but if you can catch your child being good and catch your husband being good, even though it may be, again, like mining for diamonds in the rough, in the dirt, do that and then see what difference it will make. So a great... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I just have to tell you the funniest story of somebody who did that and what happened. She and some girlfriends had decided to do sort of a book club with for women only over the phone. They all lived in different states. And she had – it had just been basically about 3 weeks. And so they'd only really been covering these subjects that we've been talking about. They hadn't gotten to any of the other subjects yet. And so she was trying this exact thing. And to not be dissatisfied and instead be, you know, positive, even though they'd had an okay relationship, you know, there'd been a lot of issues and whatever. So about 3 or 4 weeks later, she tells me that she walks in the house and her husband is pacing and he's looking really agitated. And she's like, what's wrong? You know, kind of alarmed. And he's like, oh, nothing. She's like, no, what's wrong? You know, I'm nervous. And he said, oh, look, honey, it's just, I don't know how to say this. It's just our relationship is... it's so much better than it's ever been, and we're so happy now, and I just feel like we're so in love, and everything's going so well. I'm just worried that the Lord is preparing to take one of us home.
Oh, no.
Oh. You know, and I said, did you tell him? She's like, no, I didn't want him to think I got it out of a book.
Oh, man.
And so eventually she, you know, she said, look, I've just been trying to be really mindful of this. And he thought it was awesome. But I thought that was fantastic. You know, there had been just these little changes in her approach to him. And it was a huge difference in his mind and in their relationship.
Wow, that is a classic example, and one I hope you'll share with a lot of women, because it really does drive home that point. I'd like to give away a few copies of your book. And, you know, just to give the guys equal time, what we've got is we've got three copies of For Women Only and three copies of For Men Only. We'll send you the new re-release version when it comes out in March, but we'll take your names right now. So if you are a wife, or you're in a dating relationship and you'd like a copy of For Women Only and you think that would help your marriage, your relationship, or if you're a husband, and we really haven't talked about some of the things that Shawnee and Jeff wrote in the book For Men Only, but it's equally revealing and stunning in some ways, we'd love to give you an opportunity. So what we'll do, how about this? We will take callers 10, 11, and 12 for the book For Women Only, callers 10, 11, and 12 for Women Only, and callers 13, 14, and 15 for Men Only. Actually, I'm making it kind of complicated. So what we'll do is we'll take all those callers, and then you can tell the operator which book you would like. But we've got three copies of each for Men Only and for Women Only. So give us a call. The number is 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. And we'll give you a copy of one of those books. We have three of each here at Faith Radio. It's just about 12 minutes before noon. I'm Bill Meyer. This is the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Shawnee Feldhahn. We'll have more with Shawnee and get into some interesting things she discovered about men and, well, sexuality, because it's something that's on a lot of people's mind, and certainly married couples are struggling with some of those issues. And she'll tell you about some surprising things about her survey and her research into the life of the mind when it comes to guys. That's coming up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
How would we live differently if the reality of God was at the forefront of our minds? On Monday's Faith Radio Mornings, we'll hear from author Michael Kelly. He's written the book, Boring, Finding an Extraordinary God in an Ordinary Life.
So many parents feel helpless and lost when their teenagers or young adults fall into destructive lifestyles and walk away from the principles they're raised with. Robert Morgan at 7:40 will give us hope in his book, Prayers and Promises for Worried Parents.
It's coming up on Monday's Faith Radio Mornings with Ted and PK.
Organizations are looking for someone, someone with the confidence and competence to lead and inspire positive change that not only impact those in the organization, but also the world.
Is that someone you?
With a Christ-centered master's degree in organizational leadership from Northwestern, it could be. Flexible online and blended learning formats are available. Check it out, unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Learn, lead, invest, impact.
Hi, I'm Dick Bitwer, General Manager of Faith Radio. The Bible encourages us to pray on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. So why not join with your Faith Radio family today in prayer by visiting PrayerWorks at MyFaithRadio.com. Either enter your prayer request or pray for someone else. PrayerWorks is a great way to connect with God and to minister to others. This month on Faith Radio, we're talking about living by faith.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. So great to have you with us on this Saturday. My guest is Shanti Feldhahn. She is a very prolific author and perhaps best known for her groundbreaking book for Women Only, What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men, written a few years ago. She's coming out with a new version incorporating
You're listening to A Best of Bill Meyer Live.
And then, of course, we mentioned the other book that she and her husband Jeff wrote, For Men Only, A Straightforward Guide to the Inner Lives of Women. Both of these books, fascinating. And, Shanti, I have to admit, I remember when you were on Focus on the Family, one of the things you probably took the most heat about was when you got into the issue of sexuality and how men are indeed wired by God, whether women want to hear it or not. And you got a lot of crit. You got a lot of mail, a lot of email, a lot of phone calls on this issue. So tell us what you found and what guys said when it comes to sexuality.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is a big misunderstanding for us as women. And it was actually pretty, to me, if I can just say as an aside, I was actually surprised that I didn't get as much pushback as I was expecting. I got a lot, but I was expecting even more. And I think it's because we know the truth of this once we hear it. So here's what it is. We tend to put physical intimacy in marriage as being primarily a physical need for him. That's kind of the category that we put it in. And we think, you know, it's a physical need, it's a physical urge. And, you know, I've got kids and I know a lot of people when they're like, I've been pulled on by little hands all day and sleep is a physical need too, right?
Right.
And instead, when I was asking the men, okay, what's the importance of this in your life? What I kept hearing from them really had nothing to do with the physical at all. What I kept hearing from them was this really central emotional need that they couldn't get met any other way. And it's the need that every man has to feel that his wife desires him and that she wants him. And what I found on the surveys, it was astonishing, is that what the men said is that if they feel like their wife desires them, it gives them actually a sense of confidence in all of the other areas of their life. You know, we were talking about how guys have this kind of secret sense of, do I know what I'm doing? And, you know, do I measure up? And, you know, all these ways as a father and, you know, in the workplace. And for in some mysterious way, feeling that his wife desires him, it really helps to solve some of that and makes them feel like I can tackle the world. And conversely, if he doesn't feel that his wife desires him, it really almost gives him a lack of self-confidence in every other area of his life. It's this very central emotional need that I had always thought was purely a physical one.
And I think probably a lot of women feel that way, too, and they've read other so-called experts who say, well, it's all about, you know, the physical act or the release, or guys are just horn dogs, and they just, you know. But really, maybe I shouldn't have used that term here. Please scratch that from the tape.
That's the problem with the live show, right?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, another area, though, that I know you got criticism on was guys and the fact that they're so visual and that they are tripped up and they struggle with the fact that they live in a society now where they're bombarded by images of beautiful, scantily clad women. And when you – well, first of all, tell me what you found in the survey and what guys said about that.
Yeah, well, so basically here's what it is to realize that even the most godly, devoted husband, he can't not notice when a woman is dressing in a way that calls attention to a good figure. And we think, well, he shouldn't. Well, but there's actually a biological reality behind it that I can explain if you want me to. But the key is for women to know that there is an automatic biological component to this. And then once that is passed, then it's what does he choose to do with it? And that's the question of, you know, okay, does he look or does he try to take that thought captive? But the initial response to the woman who's just not wearing very much, whether it's, you know, the woman walking across the parking lot wearing the spaghetti strap top or the image that just flashed up on the television during the commercial, we do have to realize that there is a way that God has wired the male brain that just sees that differently than we realize.
And so what's going on? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, actually, here's what's happening in the male brain that's actively different from the way the female brain is wired. And I'm making some generalizations here, but what we found is that this was probably about only 20% of women are wired in a similar way to this, so most of us just don't get it. What happens is there's actually part of the brain stem. It's the back of the brain, and it's the part of the brain that controls the stuff you don't think about, like digestion and breathing. You know, it's back there. And there's a part of the brain stem called the nucleus accumbens, and it's the part of the brain that lights up when you haven't eaten all day and you see food across the room. It's this kind of gut-level response. You're not thinking, oh, I want that food. It's this, you're drawn to it, and you're not thinking. And then you can choose what you do with it. Okay, do you go eat the food or do you turn your thoughts away because you're fasting that day or whatever? Well, it's the same thing when a man sees a woman who's dressed in this way to call overt attention to a good figure. That part of the back of the brain lights up that same exact way. And it's this biological drawn to that. And then he can decide what to do with it. The thinking centers of the brain kick in, and that's where he goes, okay, nope, I'm going to honor my wife, and I'm going to look away, or whatever. But that initial response is automatic. And that's what I think a lot of women don't realize. And we kind of think, you know what, he's none of his business what I'm wearing. He shouldn't be looking. And we don't realize, no, there is something very, very important that we have to recognize about our responsibility in this culture and how we present ourselves so we don't put a stumbling block in front of men.
Is it wrong then for a woman to get ticked off? She's having dinner with her husband in a restaurant, and a woman, attractive woman, walks by and his eyes glance up. Now, if he lingers and, you know, you see him licking his chops or something, that's one thing. But if he simply glances up and looks at her and his wife sees that, should she be angry or should she say, well, now I understand what's going on?
You know what? Usually, and this is truly when I say this, I really mean usually. This is not in every case, but in most cases, that is purely a biological response. Like, it's almost impossible for him not to notice that she's there. And so then the key is, then what does he do with that? And this is where we women, we have to recognize, wait a minute, it's the reverse of what I'm thinking. Like if his eyes glance at her and then he looks back at you or he looks down at the floor, a lot of women have emailed me so upset that I cannot believe that he noticed her. You know, I cannot, it's making me so upset, like I can't trust him. And I'm like, wait. You don't understand. What he was just doing there was honoring you. It's difficult to force your eyes and your thoughts away if you're a man.
Well, that wraps up our encore presentation of my interview with author and speaker Shanti Feldhahn.